State Board will come back to order. Next item on the agenda is the presentation of a formal opinion from the Attorney General's office. Mr. Commissioner, up to you, but welcome.
Thank you. At your, in my request, we've asked for a formal opinion on the REIT Act. We had an informal opinion before, and because of the nature of this request and how it's handled, this will go right over to you, Tony, to, I guess, to start off.
Thank you. I take it everyone has had a chance to review the opinion?
Yes.
I'm going to treat the content of the opinion as being more or less self-explanatory. I think there was... Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. You all know me. With me is Deputy Attorney General Bernie Buescher. And First Assistant Attorney General Michelle Mertz Hutchinson. They were involved in the review of the opinion. And perhaps I should also give you a little idea about the process. Once the opinion is requested, a draft is prepared. That draft is sent to all the deputies in the Attorney General's office and is also reviewed by what we call the people on the 10th floor, the Attorney General, Chief Deputy, Solicitor General, and Assistant Solicitor Generals. And it goes through a process of review and vetting before it is issued. There was, as a result of that, there was a rather different emphasis, I think, in terms of the finished product as opposed to the original informal opinion. This one talked about how there are really, when you're looking at this specific area, there's two parallel statutory programs we're talking about. One is the REIT Act, and is intended to establish literacy. The other one would be ELPA and the different federal laws under Title I and Title III that really focus on English language acquisition. And they actually have parallel tests of English language students have to take a yearly test called the Access Test to determine their progress in learning English. So I think that was part of the problem when we looked at this area is that we're really talking about the intersection of two very different programs. One is more content-oriented in terms of teaching reading and literacy, and the other one is more language acquisition oriented. And with that, I'll open it up for questions.
If okay. I may, I'm Bernie Buescher, Deputy Attorney General, and I'd like to reiterate the process that Tony just described. The process in our office is that a draft opinion is prepared, it is reviewed by the deputy, that was my job, it is sent to what we refer to as the 10th floor and to all the other deputies. Every deputy, all seven have an opportunity to weigh in. Frequently, one or more of them do, and one or more of them weighed in on this opinion. The 10th floor consists of the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, the Solicitor General, and a pair of attorneys that work supporting them in their work and in their analysis and research. I believe every one of those individuals weighed in on this opinion and signed off on the opinion before it was issued. So what I want to make sure that you understand is that we take a request for a formal opinion very seriously and make sure that we are giving the law its plain reading and interpreting it as the way it is written. Now, there will be times when we issue an opinion which says that, you know, we're not quite sure that maybe the courts are ultimately going to have to interpret something. That's not the case here. Everyone who worked on this came to the same conclusion and agreed without reservation about this opinion. Thank you.
I prefer not to go first, I'll let others proceed. Angelica?
Thank you very much. But my question is going to be to the commissioner, I think, or else staff. How does this change for the school districts that I've heard from who are overwhelmed for their second language learners? How does this change the amount of assessment?
At this point, I'm not going to address your question. Okay. Because we really need to get through the formal part of this.
One of the things as it relates to what next, we really need to study what next.
Oh, sorry.
Because we just got this Tuesday. There are impacts on the rules. I can't really, and staff, we've talked about this, can't, we're not at a point of really telling
impact
you.
Impact on rules or rurals?
Rurals.
Rurals. Rurals.
R-U-L-E-S.
R-U-L-E-S.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Small towns.
Yeah, small town accent here, okay?
Sorry.
Anyway, and we've talked about this. It's not a matter of, we don't know some of the issues, but we really, we need to talk to our staff about what really are the next steps, and then we'll have a strategy of that and bring it back.
But there is something wrong with our R-U-L-E-S right now.
We believe, but
okay.
We've got to talk about that.
Okay, thanks.
Dr. Sheffel.
So thank you for the careful work. I've read the opinion thoroughly, and it's obviously well done. Appreciate all the work that you've done. My question is on page 2 with the way the question is posed. And I'm not sure who posed the question. To me, it's the wrong question. So I think the opinion makes total sense, and I can understand why no one disagreed with it. But I don't think it's the right question. And as on page 2, it says the question presented is whether those school districts utilizing literacy instruction in both English and Spanish must assess whether their students have a significant reading deficiency in English only, or whether the assessments and determination can be made in Spanish as well. Actually, the rules already state that they must be tested in Spanish if English is not their native language. And so the rules already say that that's required. So the question is, must they also be tested in English? And that question wasn't answered. So that's the issue I have with the opinion. I'm not sure who posed the question this way, but I don't really think this is the question that at least I was looking for clarity.
Well, first of all, I believe that comes out of the letter that we received from the commissioner's office pose the question itself to determine whether a child has a significant reading deficiency by testing that child using the State Board of Education approved interim assessments, norm for students who speak Spanish as their native language, or the determination of whether a child has a significant reading deficiency must be made using only the State Board of Education approved interim assessments in English.
So I apologize if somehow I, as a board member, didn't look clearly at the commissioner's request and look at how the question was posed. I don't think we have an issue here with testing in Spanish and English. In fact, the rules already require them without any change of rule. The question is, must they also be tested in English, since the intent is for them to reach proficiency in English, which I think is clearly obvious in the intent of the language in the statute. So I don't know how to proceed at this point, but I feel the question that at least I had wasn't really answered in the opinion.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm afraid I have to disagree with you about the intent of the statute. If anything, what made this an interesting statute to interpret is that the language of the statute appeared to go out of its way to not identify English as the language of reading instruction.
That's not what I'm saying in terms of the assessment.
In terms of the READ Act,
yeah.
You're talking about in terms of interpreting the READ Act?
Not the instruction, the assessment.
Yeah.
Students whose first language is not English must be tested in Spanish, but they also must be tested in English.
Why?
Because that's the interim assessment. In other words, that's the intent of the statute.
And that's what the statute
says. That
they learn
to read in English. They can be instructed in Spanish. They must be tested in Spanish as an en route way to understand their foundational language skills. But this suggests that they need not be tested in English.
Maybe the prior.
I think you were even answering that.
Again, the definition of significant reading deficiency in the READ Act does not say in English, which was part of, I think, why we're sitting here now.
So you're saying it
mentioned a variety of reading acquisition skills like phonics, but it never identified what language reading acquisition had to be arrived at. And in fact, it never did throughout anything in the Act, in the READ Act itself, which we reference near the end of our opinion. We say it seemed to have been written in a way to avoid that question. And I strongly suspect it was written that way because of the different approaches to English language acquisition that different school districts have adopted in Colorado.
But the approach, you just even in the language, the approach to English acquisition. Is that what you said?
Well, no. The approach to the acquisition of the skills of reading in the READ Act.
You're saying that the law was silent on whether or not a student, the intent of the READ Act was that students would reach reading proficiency in English or some other language. You're saying the statute was silent. They could
Yes.
reach proficiency in any language.
The READ Act is silent on that. However, there is another act, ELPA. English Language Proficiency Act, that does deal with establishing reading proficiency, or reading included, but overall language proficiency in English. And so I think that what we're talking about when we're talking about acquisition of the English language is ELPA, and then through ELPA also Titles 1 and 3 of the federal statutes.
So, okay, Pam, go ahead.
So, is it your position that the READ Act, the motivation behind it, was reading proficiency in whatever language the child speaks? They had no concern about whether they had proficiency in English reading.
They did not define that for purposes of the READ Act, but I think one reason they didn't do that is because of the different approaches to English language proficiency that have been adopted in Colorado. There are some districts that still do bilingual programs, and the idea behind bilingual programs is that you will achieve English language proficiency at a later date, a later age for the children, but with the added advantage, theoretically at least, that they will be proficient in both languages.
Well,
if you have the READ Act, and I think it's significant in that, if you think of it in that terms, that the READ Act is really talking about kids from kindergarten through third grade. So we're talking about really sort of the earliest grades. If you think about it in those terms, then it may make sense, depending on the program adopted by the district, to test English language learner kids in Spanish for one of the earlier grades, if the intent of their overall program is that they will achieve English language proficiency in a later grade.
Isn't it true, though? I mean, I understand this to be true, is that the younger the child, the quicker they learn the language.
That's
it is confusing to me that if we, I know that in my mind, and I would assume most people value that these children would be bilingual. Why would we wait? This is what concerns me about the interpretation that we're seeing here, is that we would wait until later, and if they have problems with English language, they don't even have to be retained. So then we're waiting until they're age 8 or so to start this process, and I'm trying to understand what would be the value in delaying, assessing, and intervening for these children so that they become proficient in English as well.
Let me respond. As a person who's served on boards mm-hmm. and has served in the legislature, and now working in this job, our job is to interpret the law and not to reinterpret or imagine what the policy was that the legislature was driven by. Your approach may be right, but the legislature ultimately gets to define what the law is. And I think it is reasonable to assume that the legislature looked at ELPA, which already exists.
But my understanding, excuse me, is that ELPA doesn't address literacy.
Well, yeah, let me finish. That ELPA already existed, and this bill was designed to address reading proficiency. and is very, very silent. I mean, we've all read through this statute. We've read through it in bill form, and it's completely silent about language. It talks about reading proficiency. Why the legislature made that decision, I'm not going to hazard a guess, but that is clear from the language that what they were doing in this bill, in the reading.
Okay, Gina.
It's hard for me to be real clear on that, only because I think the question is posed in a way that I don't think is the core issue, but nonetheless, I think what you're saying in this opinion is, that's your opinion, that the READ Act is silent on what language a student is assessed in terms of reading proficiency. And the reason it's, well, I guess we won't speculate on the reason it's silent. It's silent. And thus, schools can test students in exclusively Spanish or any other language to determine reading proficiency or lack thereof at the end of third grade, and that's what the intent of the law is. Is that correct?
Not entirely, no. Just a couple things. ELPA and Title I and III do actually deal with reading acquisition in English as well, and that's tested yearly through the ACCESS test, which talks about English language arts, including reading, writing, speaking, listening, and attainment of proficiency in those areas is what I understand the ACCESS test measures. ELPA was, the READ Act was interesting in that it is silent on that, but it says that you are required to test them using one of the assessments developed and approved by the State Board of Education, which will include English language and Spanish language. So I think the intent of the law, when I'm looking at that, since bilingual programs, at least in Colorado, are exclusively bilingual programs in Spanish, that they had those in mind. Is that correct? Well, other than Global Village or...
There are other dual immersion schools. I believe there's one in Chinese, there's one in French. So there are others, and I don't know how they address this issue.
Actually, I'd be fascinated because my other hat is the charter school, representing the Charter School Institute, and they actually have several of the Global Village Academies, which, you know, that is their draw, is they have bilingual programs. But I mean, primarily, you're looking at the school districts have the programs in, they have them for Spanish and English.
Right, but I guess I'm just trying to gain clarity for the field and for us. As we look at the list of approved assessments, there are English and Spanish assessments already on the list. The current rules already require that students be tested in Spanish and English if their native language is Spanish. Now, this ruling is hard for me to interpret because I don't think it relates to the question, which is, must the students, let's just take Spanish, not only be tested in Spanish, which is already in the rules, but also in English? And I think I'm not sure the answer. If a student's native language is not English, must a student be tested in English as well as whatever other language would help with instruction or whatever else in order to determine whether or not a student has a reading deficiency?
Yeah. That is actually, I believe, answered in the opinion, and the answer is that it's really up to the district, depending on
the
district's methodology.
That's a local decision.
It's a local decision. Yeah, it's
a
local decision.
All right, thank you for the clarity.
Jane?
I'll start with the point about what was this question based on, which cannot be addressed unless we think about what was the purpose and intent of the law. And in my recollection and my interpretation is it was purely focused on significant reading deficiency. And when those determinations are made, you bring in the basic components of the learning, how to identify that, what are the criteria for being not having a deficiency. Maybe I'll go at it from the other side. Without deficiency of a significant nature, what needs to be present and evident? So I have a hard time articulating this because this is really conceptual. This is my field when it comes to language acquisition on a sidebar with reading proficiency, with just overall literacy. So I have, I enjoyed reading it, not because necessarily one way or the other I agree with the opinion. It's the idea. I thought it was very clear what the purpose of the question was, what the purpose of the law was, and what the context we all were in when that law passed. And we had come off several months of serious discussion about how do we handle our third graders, how do we handle the ultimate results of ELPA requirements. When kids get to third grade, what do we do with them? And we had spent months and months of listening to other states and how they approach that, whether they engage in, whether states ascribe to holding back, not promoting, or other means. Well, we came to our state's way of handling an identified third grader who can't read up to par. So that was our, that was, this was our approach to solving that problem. I understand, though, Deborah, I totally do understand where you're concern is about what we already have in place, but there is a lot of evidence. It's just it's actually the function of how it works, that if you can show that you have proficiency in reading skills in those five domains in your own language, that is transferred to learning other language. It sets up. So to me,
that's
right
why it's
now,
already required in the rules.
Yeah,
correct?
This is not a matter of talking about what language programs. It's to me, it's not quite that specific. This is an idea. The idea behind this question is reading a significant reading deficiency. Is there evidence for it by an assessment in any language? It's just is the core of the evidence available and obvious.
Well, I would just
Let's let them respond and then.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the intent of the law.
Went on a long time.
Okay, and then Dr. Schifflin, I've got a couple comments.
Okay, so my only comment is just to the other board members on page 2 where the question is posed. Why is that question relevant if it already says in the rules the students must be tested in Spanish? I'm having a hard time with the relevance of the question, given that the rules already state that they must be tested in Spanish. English only isn't in the rules, and yet the question seems to imply that it is, and it isn't.
So I'm just a question to... Why did we ask the question then? I'm sitting here going, why did we need this opinion?
Well, so where we're at right now is where I'd like to bring my questions and thoughts to. Essentially, I'm trying to understand the behaviors and the change in behaviors that will result from this opinion and the associated rules will flow forth from it. And the place I'm beginning, I look at this not from the law books, but I look at this from the perspective of the classroom and the child. And it's my understanding, as I've read through this and as I think I understand the conversation, that this provides a pathway where we discovered or we know from this dais that what is tested gets taught, and of course what gets taught is what's learned typically. And this would create a pathway whereby there would not really be a test in English presented to a child until eighth, third grade or later, and so that child potentially is in an environment where the English language acquisition, although it, under our best angels it wouldn't be ignored, but certainly under the pathway that is available, it could potentially be ignored until the child's 8 or 9 years old. Am I understanding kind of the construct that is being created here?
Well, but that leaves out the existence of ELPA and the other parallel statutes dealing with English language acquisition.
So under this rule in the Reed Act, the interpretation of the Reed Act, my construct is correct. However, the backstop, you're saying, that would prevent that from happening comes through ELPA, the access test, things of that nature?
I believe that's correct.
Okay, please expand on that and help me understand more.
Well, I mean, essentially you're having two parallel structures here. One has to do with acquisition of the skill of reading. The other one has to do with English language acquisition. The one having to do with English language acquisition basically says that you're required to test each child yearly for their acquisition of English language skills in a variety of areas. I had read those off previously under the access test. That data is collected and reviewed by the department I'd have to throw it back, frankly, to the department on what happens if you're not showing adequate progress on those tests in English language acquisition. But money is allocated for, I believe, 2 years for these programs once these children are identified. And I believe the intent behind that is to try to make sure that is to give districts an incentive to get the kids proficient in English within 2 years of them having been identified as English proficient.
So, Angelica?
I don't know if this helps or not, but at the school board level, this is certainly information that we received every year, that our students, our English language learners, were tested. There were different categories of their level of proficiency, and that was something that it was our job as school board members to monitor to ensure that our kids are becoming partially English. There were a couple of different classifications of where they were. And it's the district's responsibility, the school board's responsibility to be monitoring that to ensure that we're bringing the kids up. The challenge we had when I was on the board is that we kept getting so many more new non-English speaking kids that it was a challenge given the limited funding that we did receive.
Please, go ahead.
The ALPA assessments and the categories and stuff don't provide nearly the information that the READ Act assessments would provide. So to say that, and I'm not arguing if you think that this is the backstop that maybe the legislators were thinking of or that someone was thinking of, there'd be no comparison between that assessment and the assessments of the READ Act in terms of guiding assessment or helping students reach proficiency, no comparison. Yeah. So to think that that would be a replacement, I think it wouldn't at all.
Do you think that's true of the Spanish READ Act assessment that we approved? I mean, are you suggesting that the tests that we're using for Spanish speakers?
Not at all. I'm just saying that the question in this opinion tries to say that the rules imply English only, and they're just the opposite. And so there's already Spanish assessments approved on the website, identified as the department as relevant, and they're good. They're very good.
So that helps students become readers.
Right.
The ELPA assessment.
But we have no English proficiency at the end of third grade. That's the problem. So you wait so long until you know whether or not kids are moving into proficiency in reading in English because you don't have to test them in English. And to say that ELPA fills in, it doesn't. It doesn't give the same information at all.
And I'm also told that the Spanish assessments don't really test for proficiency in
not
Spanish.
In English.
Do they?
I might have
not
the
good
list again. The point is, you know, it's just an interesting discussion because the rules and already require assessing in Spanish.
It would
Now they don't require assessing in English.
Yeah,
and to say that ALPA takes the place, very different assessments.
It would certainly be open to a future legislature to amend the act to make these two acts mutually reinforcing. For English language acquisition,
if
that was a choice the legislature made. Again, part of the problem here is we are constrained by the laws that are actually passed. Although I think that discussions like this are very valuable, especially if people who may at some future point be sitting in the legislature hear them, because, I mean, laws get amended all the time when they're implemented in the field and people do identify problems or places for improvement. So.
Go ahead.
The thing that concerns me is that we're taking an opinion which is well written and incontrovertible, but to me it addresses the wrong question. So I don't know what it means for the implementation of the READ Act.
Okay, and all right, so Elaine, and then I've got a question, and then I want to come to staff because my, you know, the next step in this conversation is the policy prescription or the rule prescription that comes out of this. So Elaine, go ahead.
So Davis, I'm not saying whether you're right or you're wrong. I think I come down to the last comment that Tony just made, that what we're doing is we're interpreting the legislation. And it's very possible that the legislature had a specific intent. It's also very possible that they didn't have a specific intent and it was an oversight.
Or they missed it.
They missed it, which is, you know, oversight. So given that, I think all we can do within our authority in the rulemaking or looking at the rules we promulgated is interpret the law the way it is currently written. And I think the AG's opinion is very clear in that. Whether we agree with it or not, I think they're interpreting the law the way it's written. It may need a legislative a correction if the majority of the legislature agrees with your perspective on it. But I think we've gotten very clear interpretation of the law as it is currently written.
Well, and may I respond?
Please.
I guess my question is, if the question behind the opinion were, is the READ Act silent on the goal of the money that's allocated for it in terms of what language students should show proficiency at the end of third grade? Is the law silent? Then I would say, I'd like to know the answer to that. But that's not what this opinion addresses.
Got a quick formal opinion you want to offer up?
We don't do anything quickly.
is the READ Act silent with regard to the funding as associated with English or Spanish testing?
It doesn't make a differentiation in terms of the funding. You can identify a student as having a significant reading deficiency based on either the English language test or the Spanish language test, the way the law is written.
But that wasn't the question. You can identify a student based on which native language they speak, and it could be one of 40, right? And the money's tied to that. But the question is, how are they assessed at the end of third grade to figure out if they've made progress? And this opinion says it can't be English only. And I would say that that question was already answered, and it's in our rules to say it never was English only. I mean, on page 2, whether or not students have an SRD in English only. That wasn't the question.
As a clarification, are you referring to the READ Act rules or the ELPA rules? Okay, because, I mean, the READ Act rules do, and that's part of, I think, what you were about to get into is in terms of the necessity to change the rules to conform with the law. The current rules define significant reading deficiency as a significant reading deficiency in English and indicate that the improved assessments normed for students who speak Spanish as their late native language may be used to supplement but not replace the interim assessment in English.
Right.
So that's why we're talking about amending the rules.
Correct, which is comes to the point that I was raising earlier. I think we're creating a gap the size of a truck for potential English acquisition or the motivation of our structure to help students prior to the third grade acquire English proficiently. That's, I think we're creating a policy problem.
Well, yeah, and certainly I believe the READ Act could be amended to be more complementary in that regard to ELPA.
So that perhaps is the takeaway at this point. We've got the formal opinion back. I think the formal opinion in this conversation, other conversations around it, tease out the fact that there is potentially a risk that's being created, my opinion on this perspective.
How did we get to the rules being as they are right now?
Well,
are you saying that CDE we overreached in our understanding of the?
I'll let the commissioner, perhaps Jill, wants to talk to that. But and then the
as sensitive as this is for everyone, including staff, if you can hear me, okay. How did we get here? Okay, we got here because several districts were very concerned with how we wrote the rules. We thought at the time we wrote the rules fine. We thought we wrote the rules in accordance with the Act.
And we probably approved them, didn't we?
And we did, okay? And so did everybody else and their dog, okay? And that happened. But then Denver Public Schools and others said, wait a minute, we were involved in the writing of that Act, and it was never intended that the rules, and I'm making it very simple, but you have to understand.
Thank you,
that.
I understand
staff
that.
And others, staff and others have far better, greater expertise. But the basic question was, wait a minute, you wrote the rules in such a way that you exceeded the authority of what was meant in statute, and we know because we were helping in lobbying that. Okay. And when those issues get so profound and so divisive as this was becoming with our districts, with our staff, and this has happened on everything from sex, everything else we've had to deal with, sometimes when you write laws, there are conflicts. Not the sex itself, but the grant.
but it might as well be. Not trying to make light of it, but it then is my job to seek clarification and ask for an informal opinion, because that is a serious issue to me. If we have exceeded statutory authority, and those who claim that they were involved in the writing of this act say that you're wrong, you know, this is just plain wrong. So we got the informal opinion from Tony, and then when we asked for the formal opinion, and trying to be as broad as we can about this, did we indeed write the rules in such a way that we exceeded statutory authority? And the answer, apparently, yes.
Did we speak to the legislators behind the bill?
Yes. And part of Tony's research, I believe, on this one, you went back to all the legislative intent.
I talked
to everybody.
When you're interpreting a statute, what you do is you go back and you listen to the contemporaneous statements of the legislators, because what they say after the fact may alter depending on circumstances. That's why I know when Doug Bruce said, "I'll tell you exactly what my amendment, what Tabor says," the court said, "Well, no. It's only what you said at the time that is indicative of intent." So I did go back and we listened to the legislative hearings on that and the different testimony. Interestingly enough, this was an issue that was raised in testimony, largely from employees of DPS, but there really weren't any contemporaneous statements made by any of the actual legislators involved that dealt with this issue at all.
So mostly we have the involvement of DPS.
Yeah, you had testimony from some of the people at DPS.
Okay, so what does all of this mean is a question, I think, for the department, mm-hmm. and I don't know whether you're prepared to answer that at this juncture or whether but that is a question we need to have answered, whether at this moment or at a future moment, but what does this mean in terms of additional rules and so forth? And any other thoughts, questions from my panelists?
I will just say it's our obligation, based upon this, we need to talk with staff, the departmental staff that's been involved in this. This has been a very sensitive, divisive issue, and we need to figure it out. And then whatever, if it requires rule changes or whatever programmatic changes, you'll know. We'll bring that back to you. But anything we do on this, we'll be going back through in a first review by the Attorney General's office, because now we're into a point anything we do has to be, in my opinion, re-reviewed with them to make sure we don't create another situation, and you can understand that, because that just gets everybody and
sure. Well, and I think
we're starting school now. When, how soon will these assessments need to be made?
I think we have time. I'll have to ask staff of that. Jill, do you have any idea of this?
Mr. Chair,
please.
We have worked with the districts that have raised concerns, and we were working with them all last year, and we came up with some guidance and some ways to work together that I think we're in a good place, that they feel they have what they need to go forward this year. I think that we'll, as Commissioner Hammond said, we'll step back and look at this and meet as a team, as staff, and look at the implications, what are the changes, and get back to you on that. But I don't think it's a concern for the field at this moment based on the guidance that we provided that we co-created with them last year.
Yeah, we were kind of in that one with the informal opinion. But now this just finalizes. Now we need to step back and say, what do we need to shore up, clean up, et cetera. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Dill, Mr. Busher, Ms. Hutchison. And there's a hyphen in there somewhere.
Sorry.
Hutchison, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Lunch?
No, since it's 11:30 in the world of the agenda, it's time for the foreign language Chinese endorsement.
I'll grab my lunch.
The agenda clock. Do we need a quick break? I think we must need a quick break. No.
No.
One person needs a break. All right.
I can't imagine we're going to spend too much time on the Chinese endorsement, are we?
I'm going to try to make it very short for us.
Ni hao. The next item on the agenda is the discussion of foreign language Chinese endorsement. Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you. I don't think this would be a problem. This is really for your information. This is within the authority of the department to review But we like to make you aware of such a thing, and you know, when you see that, why did the department do that? What was the basis for that?
We appreciate that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Commissioner, members of the board, thank you for having me today. I haven't gotten a chance to see you for a while, so thank you for having me today. There was one day I got to see you like four times in a row, so I'm excited that you don't have to talk to me that much today. So today I want to present an informational item about the Chinese endorsement. We have actually been working on this. Your authority, of course, by the Board of Education is that you have the authority to adopt rules and prescribe performance-based standards for the endorsements deemed appropriate for each type of license or authorization. One of those endorsements that has already been approved by the Board of Education is the foreign language endorsement. And the foreign language endorsement very specifically says that we have the ability to implement foreign language endorsements that include but are not limited to certain content areas, including French, German, Italian, Russian, and Spanish. A stakeholder group has come to us over the last couple of years and indicated that they have a strong desire to have Mandarin Chinese as a strong foreign language endorsement content area for our educators across the state. We had in 2012, we had approximately 60 foreign language programs in our high schools for our Mandarin Chinese students. Today, we actually have about 80 programs, from full immersion courses all the way to, for our primary students, all the way to our high school students. It has become one of the most popular foreign language courses across the nation as we talk about our high school students going into a more global economy. Chinese, Mandarin Chinese specifically, is one of the most commonly spoken languages across the nation. So we are looking at
how many people speak Mandarin, do we know?
1 billion was the last thing that I saw.
So 1/7 of the world population speaks this language.
There you go.
It might be worth endorsing.
It might be worth having that conversation. So we actually started this work in the Office of Professional Services and Educator Licensing about 2 years ago as we engaged in conversation with multiple stakeholders across the state. Inherent in that was really the conversation about, do we have to adopt an entire different rule for Chinese, foreign language Chinese? What we found is that we don't, because we do have that statute that says that it may include but is not limited to Spanish, Latin, Russian. So today we're bringing forward essentially an informational item that says that we would like to move forward to include Chinese as a foreign language endorsement area under our already current foreign language endorsement standards. So you would have a teacher who is a professional educator with a professional license endorsed in foreign language in Chinese. There are a couple of things that we need to do as far as a timeline is concerned as we move forward. And a few of those are implement officially and announce to the rest of our stakeholders across the state that Chinese is available as a foreign language endorsement for us. Our timeline right now to be able to do that is in September after our board meeting here. Formal communications that Chinese is accepted. There are a few pieces that we want to consider, though. Right now, we do not have an assessment, the content assessment, in either PLACE nor Praxis or any other, that are approved by the Board of Education or have been vetted by our stakeholders across the state. So what we would like to do is notify our stakeholders that, yes, we can accept a Chinese foreign language endorsement, but it will be by degree only at this point, and then go ahead and amass September through November our stakeholder groups to begin really looking at some of the content assessments and comparing those, the outcomes of those with our expectations in the classroom, and then bring that forward to the board to say these are the recommended content assessments that would allow us to have an endorsement in that area as well. That would be culminating. We expect that to culminate in December of this year and then identify cut scores as approved by the Board of Education in January. So full implementation that we could take forward to our institutes of higher education and our programs would go forward. But essentially come September, we would be able to accept educators applying for an endorsement in Chinese as we go forward. That is kind of where we are with our next steps and our opportunities on the table. I would be more than happy to entertain any questions you might have.
Questions? Jane?
Well,
Our language instructor.
Let's go for this. It's been a need for a long time. This is my input here, folks. But, yeah, for several years, we've had Chinese professionals, language professionals coming to the country and to Colorado for a long time. And appreciative of the districts and CDE's efforts to make that work out as best as possible and always to maintain these programs. It's very important. Colleen, you will not be surprised by my question. I just wonder if on that third the prior slide bullet, December-ish goal, in our January timeline, are we possibly going to be able to talk about a revamp or a new assessment choice for some of the other languages? And that is something that my community of constituents in that field are asking for regularly. So it would be the French, and primarily I think the French, anything where praxis is not readily and quickly accessible to Colorado candidates for licensure.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the question and an opportunity for us to kind of connect some of the other work that we are doing for the next 12 to 18 months. So we have engaged in the rule review and content assessment process that will launch fully in the next 2 weeks.
Great.
And be more of a widespread opportunity for people to become engaged with a timeline and work plan. So we do absolutely expect within the next 6 months that we'll be able to come to the table and bring stakeholders to the table to have more conversation about our place, our praxis, and our content assessments, as well as opening up that conversation about the foreign language rules as a whole. Okay. There have been opportunities for people to engage in conversation thus far, but we think that that's a larger conversation that we'll be able to bring forward. So the answer is yes, we absolutely believe in the next several months we'll be able to have that conversation. As far as the timeline for delivering and changing some of that, I don't expect some of the content assessments to come forward maybe until a little bit later in the spring. Oh,
thank you very much. It's good to hear.
No further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for your time.
All right. So we will take a break and come back in at 1 p.m. for a discussion of the achievement and growth results.